no. Everyone stand still. Maybe he won't attack.
Santa, I think we're in big trouble.
Oh, boy. All of me is running, but my legs won't budge. Scooby, get off of me.
Good, Shaggy. Give me your knapsack.
Scooby, what are you doing? Get off of Shaggy.
Leave him alone, Shaggy. Quick, Scooby, here comes that bear.
Why, just look. Scooby's grabbed Shaggy's peanut butter and jelly sandwiches from his knapsack. And he's throwing them to the bear. And the bear... The bear loves them.
And he's going away, licking his paws.
That was very smart thinking, Scooby-Doo.
It was brilliant, Scoob!
Great, Scooby-Doo! You saved us all! Oh, Scooby, thank you! Thank you!
Some friend! Did you have to give him all of my sandwiches?
Would you rather give him an arm and leg?
When you put it that way, it makes a lot of sense.
Thank heavens! All of my elves are unhurt, and my sack of toys has not even been damaged. Now I can give all of the children of the world a Merry Christmas. And Scooby-Doo, since it was you who found my sack of toys and saved us all from the bear, I'm going to let you ride with me on this Christmas Eve and help me make my deliveries.
Great! Thanks, Santa.
Say, look at that big smile on Scooby's face. Boy, he must be having some wonderful dream.
I'll bet he's dreaming about a great big Christmas dinner.
Well, one thing's for sure. That's what you'd be dreaming about, Shaggy.
The chimney soot is getting into my nose, Santa. Where am I?
What on earth were you dreaming about, Scooby-Doo?
Tell us about your dream, Scoob.
I'll never tell.
Merry Christmas, everybody! Merry Christmas to all! And a very Merry Christmas to you, Scooby-Doo!
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. All the fun is to ride in one horse open sleigh. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun is to ride in one horse open sleigh. Dashing through the snow in a one horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in one horse open sleigh. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in one horse open sleigh.
Yep. All right, so that was Scooby-Doo and Friends, and lovely story, Trouble in Santa's Workshop. Yeah, it's a bear. It was a bear. But there you go. Santa got his big sack of toys back, and he was able to deliver Christmas to all the kids around the world. Anyways, yeah, hey, it's just after 10 o'clock, and you are listening to The Big Waste of Time. Global Chemical Corporate Empire and Theme Park Industrial Complex Consortium presents The Big Waste of Christmas, here with me, Don the Don Rossberger, here on the station you love, in the town where you live, or aspire to be, WUVT, FM 90.7, Blacksburg, Virginia. And, I'm here, and I'll be here till midnight. And, I'm getting some stuff lined up for this next half an hour. We're going to start the 10 o'clock hour. It's more time for more story times, kids. And, we're gonna turn things over to a weird Paul Petrosky, a personal friend of mine, a good guy, and he put out an album a bunch of years ago called Songs for Santa, and this is not actually a song, but it's on the album, and it's good. He's going to read the read some of A Christmas Carol to you, the Charles Dickens classic, and it's wonderful. And I'm going to have him do that, and underneath in the bed, I'm going to play some Singing Saw from Julian Coster of the Music Tapes. He's got some Christmas tunes, holiday tunes, that he plays on the saw. And so that'll be underneath as Paul reads the story of Ebenezer Scrooge and Jacob Marley and the ghosts of Christmas past, present, future, and all that. So without further ado, we're just going to turn it over to him.
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3, testing. A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Extra words, phrases, and sentences added by and adapted by Paul Petrosky. Marley's ghost. Marley was dead to begin with. I think he's talking about Bob Marley. I think Ziggy Marley's still alive. There is no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, and the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it, and Scrooge's name was good upon change for anything he chose to put his hand to. Old Marley was dead as a doornail, and that's just about as dead as you can be. By the way, in this book that I got out of the library, a lot of that was scratched out for some reason. The next part I'll be reading to you is in parentheses. Mind, I don't mean to say that I know of my own knowledge what there is particularly dead about a doornail. I might have been inclined myself to regard a coffin nail as the deadest piece of ironmongery in the trade, but the wisdom of our ancestors is in the simile, and my unhallowed hands shall not disturb it, or the country's done for. You will therefore permit me to repeat emphatically that Marley was dead as a doornail. Scrooge knew he was dead? Of course he did. How could it be otherwise? Scrooge and he were partners for I don't know how many years. Scrooge was his sole executor, his sole administrator, his sole assigned, and his sole asylum. His sole friend, his sole residuary legati, and his sole aside, and his sole mourner. And even Scrooge was not so dreadfully cut up by the sad event, but that he was an excellent man of business on the very day of the funeral, and solemnized it with an undoubted bargain. I'm gonna take a drink, hold on. The mention of Marley's funeral brings me back to the point I started from. There is no doubt that Marley was dead. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story I'm going to relate. If he were not perfectly convinced that Hamlet's father died before the play began, there would be nothing more remarkable in his taking a stroll at night in an easterly wind upon his own ramparts than there would be in any other middle-aged gentleman rashly turning out after dark in a breezy spot, say, St. Paul's Churchyard, for instance, literally to astonish his son's weak mind. Scrooge never painted out old Marley's name. There it stood, years afterwards, above the warehouse door. Scrooge and Marley. The firm was known as Scrooge and Marley. Sometimes people new to the business called Scrooge Scrooge and sometimes Marley, but he answered to both names. It was all the same to him. Sometimes they called Marley Scrooge and sometimes they called Scrooge Marley. Sometimes they called Scrooge Chuck, but he didn't know who they were talking to. Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, conventus old sinner. Hard and sharp as flint, from which no steel had ever struck out generous fire, secret and self-contained and solitary as an oyster. And with a pearl, probably. The cold within him froze his old features, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheek, stiffened his gait, made his eyes red, his thin lips blue, and spoke out shrewdly in his grating voice. A frosty rime was on his head, and on his eyebrows, and his wiry chin. He carried his own low temperature always about with him. He iced his office in dog days, and didn't thaw 1 degree on Christmas, which means, basically, that it was really cold. External heat and cold had very little influence on Scrooge. No warmth could warm, no wintry weather chill him. No wind that blew was bitterer than he. No falling snow was more intent upon its purpose, no pelting rain less open to entry. Or any other treaty, for that matter. Foul weather didn't know where to have him. The heaviest rain and snow and hail and sleet could boast of advantage over him and the mailman in only one respect. They often came down handsomely, and Scrooge never did. No one ever stopped him in the street to say with gladsome looks, "My dear Scrooge, how are you? When will you come to see me?" No beggars implored him to bestow a trifle. No children asked him what was it o'clock. No man or woman ever once in his all his life inquired the way to such and such a place of Scrooge. Even the blind man's dogs appeared to know him, and when they saw him coming on, they would tug their owners into doorways and up courts, and then would wag their tails as though they said, "No eye at all is better than an evil eye, dark master. Bark, bark, bark." But what did Scrooge care? It was the very thing he liked. To edge his way along the crowded paths of life, warning all human sympathy to keep its distance, was what the knowing ones called nuts to Scrooge. Once upon a time, of all the good days in the year, on Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busily in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting weather, foggy withal, and he could hear the people in the court outside go wheezing up and down, beating their hands upon their breasts, and stamping their feet upon the pavement stones to warm them. The city clocks had only gone just about 3, I read that kind of backwards, but it was quite dark already. It had not been light all day, and candles were flaring in the windows of the neighboring offices, like ruddy smears upon the palpable brown air. The fog came pouring in at every chink and keyhole, and was so dense without that although the court was of the narrowest, the houses opposite were mere phantoms. To see the dingy cloud come dropping down, obscuring everything, one might have thought that nature lived hard by and was brewing on a long scale. The door of Scrooge's counting house was open, that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, who was a dismal little call beyond a sort of tank, was copying letters. Scrooge had a very small fire, but the clerk's fire was so much smaller that it looked like one coal. I guess it probably was one coal. But he couldn't replenish it, for Scrooge kept the coal box in his own room, and so surely as the clerk came in with the shovel, the master predicted what it would be necessary for them to part. Wherever the clerk put on his white comforter and tried to warm himself at the candle, in which effort, not being a man of strong imagination, he failed. "A Merry Christmas, Uncle! God save you!" cried a cheerful voice. It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew, who came upon him so quickly that it was the first intimation he had of his approach. "Bah!" said Scrooge. "Humbug!" He had so heated himself with rapidly walking in the fog and frost, this nephew of Scrooge's, that he was all in a glow. His face was ruddy and handsome, his eyes sparkled, and his breath smoked again. "Christmas a humbug, Uncle!" said Scrooge's nephew. "You don't mean that, I am sure." "I do," said Scrooge. "Merry Christmas! What right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough." "Come then," returned the nephew gaily. "What right have you to be dismal? What reason have you to be morose? You're rich enough." Scrooge, having no better answer, readily, on the spur of the moment, said, "Bah!" again, and followed it up with, "Humbug!" "Don't be cross, Uncle," said the nephew. "What else can I be," returned the uncle, "when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas! Out upon Merry Christmas! What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money, a time for finding yourself a year older and not an hour richer, a time for balancing your books and having every item in them through a down dozen of months presented dead against you? If I could work my will," said Scrooge indignantly, "every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart. He should!"
"Uncle," pleaded the nephew.
"Nephew," returned the uncle sternly, "keep Christmas in your own way, and let me keep it in mine."
"Keep it," repeated Scrooge's nephew, "but you don't keep it."
Let me leave it alone, then," said Scrooge. "Much good may it do to you. Much good has it ever done you."
I don't think anyone out there listening to this tape will ever listen to it again, but let me continue. There are many things from which I might have thrived good, but by which I have not profited, I dare say," returned the nephew. "Christmas among the rest. But I am sure I have always thought of Christmas time, when it comes round apart from the veneration due to its sacred name and origin, if anything belonging to it can be apart from that, as a good time. A kind, forgiving cheer. I don't know what the hell I'm reading, but I think what he's trying to say, basically, is that Christmas is nice, you know, whether you have money or not, and it's always a good time of the year. Let me have another drink here. Okay. Well, I'm going to skip a little here. I don't know. I'm probably going to run out of tape, so I better just skip a little. Basically, what he's saying here is stuff. Okay, I'm just going to, right where he's leaving here is where I'm going to end up. "Good afternoon," said Scrooge, "and a happy new year." "Good afternoon," said Scrooge. His nephew left the room without an angry word, notwithstanding. He stopped at the outer door to bestow the greetings of the season on the clerk, who, cold as he was warmer than Scrooge, for he returned them cordially.
"There's another fellow," muttered Scrooge, who overheard him. "My clerk with 15 shillings a week and a wife and family talking about a Merry Christmas. I'll retire to Bedlam."
This lunatic, in letting Scrooge's nephew out, had let 2 other people in. They were portly gentlemen, pleasant to behold, and now stood with their hats off in Scrooge's office. They had books and papers in their hand and bowed to him.
"Scrooge and Marley's, I believe," said one of the gentlemen, referring to his list. pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years, Scrooge replied. He died 7 years ago this very night.
We have no doubt his liberality is well represented by his surviving partner, said the gentleman presenting his credentials.
It certainly was, for they had been two kindred spirits. At the ominous word liberality, Scrooge frowned, shook his head, and handed the credentials back.
At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, said the gentleman taking up a pen, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute, who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts, sir.
Are there no prisons? Asked Scrooge.
Plenty of prisons, said the gentleman, laying down the pen again.
And the Union workhouses? Are they still in operations?
They are, still, returned the gentleman. I wish I could say they were not.
The treadmill and the poor law are in full rigor, then?
Both are very busy, sir.
Oh, I was afraid that when you said at first that something had occurred to stop their usual course. I'm glad to hear it.
Under the impression that they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude, a few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. We choose this time because it is a time of all others, when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. What shall I put you down for?
Nothing, Scrooge replied. Nothing, Scrooge replied. Nothing, Scrooge replied.
I thought I'd emphasize that part.
You wish to be anonymous? I wish to be left alone, said Scrooge.
Since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there.
Many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they would rather die, said Scrooge, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population. Besides, excuse me, I don't know that.
But you might know it.
It's not my business. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Seeing clearly it would be useless to pursue their point, the gentleman withdrew. Scrooge resumed his labors with an improved opinion of himself and a mere facetious temper that was usual with him. Sorry, I can't pronounce all these words. Dickens really is the Dickens of prose, isn't he? Let me have another drink here.
Foggier yet and colder. Piercing, searching, biting cold. If the good Saint Dustin had been nipped to the evil spirit's nose with a touch of such weather as that, instead of using his familiar weapons, then indeed he would have roared to lusty purpose. Oh, yes, he would. The owner of one scant young nose, gnawed and mumbled by the hungry cold as bones are gnawed by dogs, stooped down at Scrooge's keyhole to regale himself with a Christmas carol. But at the first sound of, God bless ye, merry gentlemen, may nothing you dismay, Scrooge seized the ruler with such energy of action, and the singer fled in terror, leaving the keyhole to the fog and even the more congenial frost. Well, let's go on now. We're going to have to skip a bit, I can see, but we'll see what we can do. At length, the hour of shutting up the county house arrived. With an ill will, Scrooge dismounted from his stool and tactfully admitted the fact to the expectant clerk in the tank, who instantly stuffed his candle out and put on his hat.
You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose, said Scrooge.
If quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient, said Scrooge, and it's not fair. If I was to stop half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound.
The clerk smiled faintly.
And yet, said Scrooge, you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work.
The clerk observed that it was only once a year.
A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December, said Scrooge, buttoning his great coat to the chin. But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier next morning.
The clerk promised that he would, and Scrooge walked out with a growl. All right, we're going to have to skip a little bit here. Okay, we'll start right here. Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door, except that it was very large. It was also a fact that Scrooge had seen it night and morning during a whole residence in the place. Also that Scrooge had little of what is called fancy about him, as any man in the City of London, even including, which is a bold word, the corporation, aldermen, and the livery. Or is that livery? I think it's livery. But if they eat liver, then they're livery. Let it also be borne in mind that Scrooge had not bestowed one thought on Marley since his last mention of the 7 years dead partner that afternoon. And then let any man explain to me, if he can, how it happened that Scrooge, having his key in the lock of the door, saw in the knocker, without its undergoing any intermediate process of change. He saw not a knocker, but Marley's face.
And that kind of scared him, I guess.
Yeah, skip a little bit more. Now, after this, he went to his house, and he locked the door, and that's what happened. And now we're going to start again, right here. That's another part of Marley's ghost. We're trying to get through this. I don't think we're going to make it.
Still quite a bit of book to read. Well, we're working on it. After several turns, he sat down again. As he threw his head back in the chair, his glance happened to rest upon a bell, a disused bell that hung in the room and communicated for some purpose now forgotten with a chamber in the highest story of the building. It was with great astonishment and with a strange, inexplicable dread that he looked, he saw this bell begin to swing. It swung so softly in the outset that it scarcely made a sound, but soon it rang out loudly, as did so every other bell in the house. This might have lasted half a minute or a minute, but it seemed like an hour. Maybe it was an hour. The bells ceased as they had begun together. They were succeeded by a clanking noise deep down below, as if some person were dragging a heavy chain over the casks in the wine merchant's cellar. Scrooge then remembered to have heard that ghosts in haunted houses were described as dragging chains. The cellar door flew open with a booming sound, and then he heard the noise much louder, on the floors below, then coming up the stairs, then coming straight towards his door. It's humbug still. I won't believe it. His color changed, though, when, without a pause, it came on through the heavy door and passed into the room before his eyes. Upon its coming in, the dying flame leaped up as though it cried, "I know him! Marley's ghost!" and fell again. The same face, the very same. Marley in his pigtail, usual waistcoat, tights and boots, the tassels on the later bristling like his pigtail, and his coat skirts, and the hair upon his head. The chain he drew was collapsed about the middle. It was long and wound about him like a tail, and it made, for Scrooge observed it closely, out of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel. His body was transparent, so that Scrooge, observing him and looking through his waistcoat, could see the two buttons on his coat beneath, behind. Scrooge had often heard that Marley had no bowels, but he never believed it until now. Boy, I wish I have more bowels than Marley does, let me tell ya. Looking on the story. "Hey now, what do you want with me?" said Scrooge, etc. So anyway, what happened basically was the ghost told Scrooge that he was going to see three spirits that night, and they were going to come and visit him. And then Marley's ghost went away. Now we're going to start on the first of the three spirits, because we'll never make it through the tape if we don't. Because there are three spirits. So let's start with the first. When Scrooge awoke, it was so dark that looking out of bed, he could scarcely distinguish the transparent window from the opaque walls of the chamber. You know, I've had that feeling before. He was endeavoring to pierce the darkness with his ferret eyes when the chimes of a neighboring church struck the four quarters. So he listened for the hour. To his great astonishment, the heavy bell went on from 6 to 7, from 7 to 8, and regulated up to 12, and it stopped. 12. It was past 2 when he went to bed. The clock was wrong. An icicle must have gotten to the works. How could it have been 12? He touched the spring of his repeater to correct his most preposterous clock. Its rapid little pulse beat 12. That's my phone ringing, but I'm not going to answer it. I'm sure it's not for me. I haven't had a phone call in, I don't know, a month now. "Why, it isn't possible," said Scrooge, "that I have slept through a whole day and far into another night. It isn't possible that anything has happened to the sun, and this is 12 at noon." The idea being an alarm, it's for my dad. Well, anyway, I'll skip this. This is really stupid. I'm going to keep skipping this until the part comes where the ghost actually comes. Okay, this is the part where the ghost comes. Even this, though, when Scrooge looked at with increasingly steadiness, was not its strangest quality. For its belt sparkled and glittered now as in one part and now in another, and what was light one instance was now another time dark, so that the figure itself fluctuated in its distinctness. I really don't like this, you know, these words are too big for me. Being now a thing with one arm, now with one leg, now with 20 legs, now a pair of legs without a head, now a head without a body, of which dissolving parts, no outline would be visible in the dense gloom wherein they melted away, and now a head. And in this very wonder of this, it would be itself again, distinct and clear as ever. "Are you the spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold to me?" asked Scrooge. "I am." The voice was soft and gentle, singularly low, as if instead of being so close beside him, it were at a distance. "Who and what are you?" Scrooge demanded.
"I am the ghost of Christmas past."
"Long past?" inquired Scrooge, observant at its dwarfish stature.
"No, your past."
Perhaps Scrooge could have told anyone why, if anybody could have asked him, but he had a special desire to see the spirit in his cap and begged him to be covered.
"What?" exclaimed the ghost. "Would you so soon pull out his worldly hands around here? Is it not enough that you are one of those whose passions made this cap and forced me through the whole trains of years to wear it low upon my brow?"
Scrooge reverently disclaimed all intention to offend, or any knowledge of having willfully bonneted the spirit at any period of its life. He then made bold to inquire what business brought him here.
You're out there,
said the ghost. Scrooge expressed himself in much obliged, not help thinking that the night of unbroken rest would have been more conductive to that end. The spirit must have heard him thinking, for it said immediately,
"Your reclamation land, take heed!"
It put out its strong hand as it spoke and clasped him gently by the arm. It would have been in vain for Scrooge to plead that the weather and the hour are not adapted to pedestrian purposes. His bed was warm and the thermometer a long way below freezing, and he was clad lightly in his slippers, dressing gown, and nightcap, and that he had a cold upon him that, at the time. The grasp, though, of a generous woman's hand was not to be resisted. He rose, but finding that the spirit made toward the window, clasped its robe in supplication. I am immortal and liable to fall.
Yes, but we'll never finish this book on this tape unless we skip some of the story, so we're going to have to do that right now. Now, let's start right here. What was the matter?
Asked the spirit. Nothing, said Scrooge, nothing. There was a boy singing a Christmas carol at my door last night. I should like to have given him something, that's all. The ghost smiled thoughtfully and waved his hand, saying as it did so,
Let us see another Christmas.
Scrooge's former self grew larger at the words, and the room became a little darker and more dirty. The panels shrunk, the windows cracked, fragments of plaster fell out of the ceiling, and the naked lass was shown instead. But how all this was brought about, Scrooge had no more than you do. You know more than you do. He only knew that it was quite correct, that everything had happened so, and there he was alone again, when all the other boys had gone home for the jolly holidays. He was not reading now, but walking up and down despairingly. Scrooge looked at the ghost, and with a mournful shaking of his head glanced anxiously towards the door. It opened, and a little girl, much younger than the boy, came darting in, put her arms about his neck, and often kissing him, addressed him as her dear, dear brother. I have come to bring you home, dear brother, said the child, clapping her tiny hands and bending down to laugh. To bring you home, home, home! Home, little fan, returned the boy. Yes, said the child, brimful of glee. Home for good and all, home for ever and ever. Father is so much kinder than he used to be, that home's like heaven. He spoke so gently to me one dear night when I was going to bed, that I was not afraid to ask him once more if you might come home, and he said, yes, you should, and he set me in coach to bring you. And you're to be a man, said the child, opening her eyes, and are never to come back here. But first we'll be all together on Christmas long, you'll have the merriest time in the world. She clapped her hands and laughed and tried to touch his head, but being too little, laughed again and stood on tiptoe to embrace him. Yeah, yeah, sure he did. All right. Let's turn a little bit more. So anyway, he's going home and everything, and you know, he's going to have a good time. And, well, I got to say this. It's a really weird, there's some really weird words in the book here. Let me read them. Hilly ho, Dick. Cheer up, Ebenezer. Those are pretty cool, huh? All right. Well, anyway, so the guys, so they're taking the kid home. You know, it's Scrooge when he was little and everything. There's some kind of ball he went to. I think if you've seen the Mr. Magoo cartoon, have you seen the Mr. Magoo cartoon? There's this Mr. Magoo cartoon of A Christmas Carol. It's really good, and if you've seen that, then you think you know what I'm trying to say, right? If you saw the one with Fonzie in it, you know, that Scrooge movie? No, that's no good. I haven't seen the one with Tom Hanks. Is that who was in it, or was it Bill Murray? I think it was Bill Murray, wasn't it? I haven't seen that one, but I don't think I want to. All right, I'll have to turn a little bit more. Let's go on to the second of the three spirits. This is another spirit. This is a spirit. Here we go. Let me read you about this spirit. The moment Scrooge's hand was on the lock, a strange voice called him by his name and bade him to enter. He obeyed. It was his own room. There was no doubt about that. But it had undergone a surprising transformation. The walls and ceiling were so huge with living green that it looked like a perfect grove, from every part of which bright, gleaming berries glistened. The crisp leaves of holly, mistletoe, and ivy reflected into the light, as if so many little mirrors had been scattered there. And such a mighty blaze went roaring up the chimney, as the dull petrification of a hearth had never known in Scrooge's time or Marley's, and for many, many a winter season gone. Heaped up upon the floor to form some kind of throne were turkeys, geese, game, poultry, brawn, great joints of meat, sucking pigs, long wreaths of sausage, mince pies, plum puddings, barrels of oysters, red-hot chestnuts, cherry-cheeked apples, juicy oranges, luscious pears, immense 12th cakes, and seething bowls of punch. That's a lot of food. In easy state upon the couch, there sat a jolly giant. The jolly green giant? No, he wasn't green. He had kind of a flesh-colored skin by the picture I'm looking at in the book. Oh, let me keep reading. Not unlike Pliny's horn, and he held it up high, this torch he had, to shed its light on Scrooge as he came peeping around the door.
Come in, exclaimed the ghost. Come in, and know me better, man.
Scrooge entered timidly and hung his head before the spirit. He was not the dogged Scrooge he had been, and though its eyes were clear and kind, he did not like to meet them.
I am the ghost of Christmas present,
said the spirit. Look upon me.
Scrooge reverently did so. It was clothed in one simple, deep green robe. Oh, maybe it was the green, jolly green giant. Or mantle bordered with fur, white fur. This garment hung so loosely on the figure that its capacious breast was bare, as it disdaining the reward of the concealed artifice. Now, let me turn another page and read some more about the spirit here. Have you had many brothers, spirit?
More than 1,800,
said the ghost. A tremendous family to provide for, muttered Scrooge. The ghost of Christmas present rose. Ah, it's the ghost of Christmas presents. Not Christmas gifts, but that's really the same thing. Let me have another drink. Okay, apparently he's going to take him to look at Christmas present, which is those people, you know, what are their names? The Cratchits. He's going to take them to see them. And there's a little kid, Tiny Tim, who, he has his guitar in his shopping bag and a ukulele, and he sings Tiptoe Through the Tulips, you know, Tiny Tim. And he needs a crutch or something, and he has a crutch, that's it. And, because he needs an operation, so he has this crutch, and the crutch may just be sitting there, I don't know. Let's go to the third of the three spirits, because the tape is almost gone. I'm sorry that I'm kind of giving you the shortened version here, but, you know, what can I do? Now, this spirit doesn't really talk, so I'm going to unplug this bad-sounding microphone. Okay, sounds much better now. Well, the phantom slowly, gravely, and silently approached. When it came near him, Scrooge bent down upon his knee, for in the very air through this, which the spirit moved, it seemed to scatter gloom and mystery. It was shrouded in a deep black garment, which concealed its head, its face, its form, and left nothing of it visible save one outstretched hand. I guess it's into a lot of gothic music, you know. But this would have been difficult to detach the figure from the night, and separated from this darkness by which it was surrounded. Scrooge said, "What do you like? Do you like the cure?" Anyway, let's just keep reading. "I am in the presence of the ghosts of Christmas yet to come," said Scrooge. The spirit answered not, but pointed downward with its hand. "You are about to show me shadows of things that have not happened, but will happen in the time before," Scrooge pursued. "Is that so, spirit?" The upper portion of the garment was contracted for an instant in its folds, and the spirit had inclined its head. That was the only answer he received. Although well used to ghostly company by this time, Scrooge feared the silent shape so much that his legs trembled beneath him, but found that he could hardly stand when he was prepared to follow it. "Ghost of the future," he exclaimed, "I fear you more than any specter I've seen. But as I know your purpose is to do me good, and I have hoped to live to be another man from what I was, I'm prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me?" It gave him no reply. The hand was pointed straight before him. Well, anyway, so he takes him to the house and shows him that, you know, that the crutch is up against the fireplace. And then he takes him and he shows these people, like, rolling dice for his clothes and stuff, you know? You know, and he's wondering who died, you know? Nobody's telling him who died. But apparently someone had died, and he really wants to know, you know, who it is that died and everything. And let me find the correct page here. Here it is. Let me get the right page. Okay. "The ghosts of Christmas yet to come conveyed him, as before, though as a different time," he thought. Indeed, there were seemed no order in these later visions, that they should be showed in the future, into the resorts of businessmen, but showed him not himself. Indeed, the spirit did not stay for anything, but went straight on as to the end as just now desired, until besought by Scrooge to tarry for a moment. "This court," said Scrooge, "through which we hurry now, is my place of occupation, is, and has been for a length of time. I see the house. Let me behold where I shall be in days to come." The spirit stopped. Its hand was pointed elsewhere. "The house is yonder," Scrooge exclaimed. "Why do you point away?" The inexorable finger underwent no change. Scrooge hastened to the window of his office. Somebody's in here. Oh, it's Mom. Hey, Mom. How you doing? Where was I? He joined it once again, and wondering why and whither he had gone, accompanied it until they reached an iron gate. He paused to look around before entering. A churchyard. Here, then, the wretched man whose name was now to learn lay underneath the ground. It was a worthy place. Walled in by houses, overrun by grass reeds, the growth of vegetation's death, not life, choked up with too much burying, fat, and repleted appetite. A worthy place. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one. He advanced towards it, trembling. The phantom was exactly as it had been, but he dreaded that he saw new meaning in its solemn shape. "Before I draw nearer to that stone to which you point," said Scrooge, "answer me one question. Are these the shadows of things that will be, or are they shadows of the things that may be only?" Still the ghost pointed downward to the other grave to where he stood. "Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends, to which if preserved and they must lead," said Scrooge. "But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus with what you show me." Spirit was immovable as ever. Scrooge crept towards it, trembling as he went, and following the finger read upon the stone of the neglected grave his own name. Ebenezer Scrooge! Am I the man who lay upon the bed, he cried, opening his knees? Opening his knees? I'm sorry, upon his knees. It's hard to open your knees, but the tape's just about over. But he sees his name on the thing. Now, I'm not going to read anymore. Let me just tell you the way I see it. In the Magoo cartoon, he went home, and he woke up, and he didn't know what had happened, and, well, he remembered what had happened, and he felt so happy. This kid was beneath his window, and he gave the kid all his money, like a whole bag of it, and he was, like, out on the ledge, Mr. Magoo was, and he was kind of blind, so he couldn't see where he was, and he threw all his money down, and the kid went and bought a turkey for the Cratchits. Then he went to the Cratchits, and he gave them all these toys, and all this money and stuff, and they were all real happy, and Scrooge said, and Tiny Tim said, God bless us, everyone. And also, one other thing that happened was they sang in the Magoo cartoon. They sang this song about Rappleberry dressing or something like that. It was really great. See, if you haven't seen, I don't see how you couldn't have seen the Magoo cartoon. But if you haven't seen that Magoo cartoon, it's usually on like Thanksgiving Day or something. So keep your eyes open for the Magoo cartoon. It's really great because Mr. Magoo is really cool because he's half blind. And if you ever saw the Mr. Magoo show, at the beginning he like ride his car on a roller coaster, and the roller coaster would be coming down. He'd yell, "Roadhog!"
Yeah, hey there. It's Don. I'm back. You just heard a Christmas carol as read by the wonderful and amazing Weird Paul Petrosky of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Good guy. He came to Blacksburg a bunch of years ago and played a show, and it was fun. And yeah, so there you go. It's Christmas time. It's the winter. It's the fall, past the fall. It's technically, is it winter yet? Technically, I don't know. I would have to consult a calendar. Something tells me it's not quite winter yet, though it feels like it. We haven't gotten any snow here yet, but I'm sure that'll happen at some point. I'd hope not, but you know, whatever. Anyways, I guess I haven't read any one of these, so let me read a public service announcement here for you. This is public service announcement number 430. We will never kill this one. Every 2 seconds, a person in the United States needs blood. Do your part by giving blood at your local Red Cross blood drive. One donation can help save the lives of 3 human beings. Visit redcrossblood.org for more information and to find a blood drive near you. All right, so we've got it looks like an hour and 20 minutes or so left in the program, and I'll do my best to jam-pack it full of goodness and awesome and wonderful and all of that stuff. What do we got? Oh, yes, coming up here next from the album Hardcore Holiday, I'm going to play one of my favorite bands. And that band would be Killdozer. And we've got a great track here called "O Little Town of Deathlehem." Oh yeah.
Advisor, this'll be your last. Christmas Day. Yeah.
just go tell, tell what you want. But you might not get it if your dad is broke again.
Santa Claus, you want to know what it's all about? Santa Claus got drunk last night. Everybody tried to throw him out. But I want to tell you, folks, how it all began. Santa stopped at a neighbor's house and started drinking good gin. Now, while I was with him, I named a few. I love to name some of them whiskeys that Santa was drinking to you. It was way back in the ancient age, down in Mid-Spring Valley, where the crab tree grow. An old granddaddy bought a rocking chair for Mr. Boston. One day we're rocking in the mellow breeze. The rocking chair broke and threw him by the muffles. He jumped up thinking about his old drum. Saddled his white horse, said he's going over to Johnny Walker. He swam the three rivers, past the cabin still. On his way over to Johnny Walker's, he sees something in old cornfield. He hollered Johnny Walker's and bring me a yellow stone. I'm going down to the ladies' club and getting me a chaser. Come back and kill the old crow. That's when the white horse doubled up like beauty in the front of the Wilkin family. That was a disgrace that old teacher with the red bud. He'd tell everybody in town except Paul Jones. He was wearing four roses and had seven crowns. The pride of what to stop was up in Cave Hollow, watching the white swan swim down Sunny Brook and emptied in the Green River. When a rum got after him, chasing down 76 up 51 through champagne velvet, made him catch up a slow gin, lose 20 grand. Now he's out in old California port. Mr. R.W. Harper and old log cabin, sleeping on the three feathers. Santa be around next year. See you later, my friend. I couldn't help it. I was loaded on this good Gordon gin.
Hey, Daddy loves you, all my little kids. That's why it hurts me to say Santa won't be coming by this year. I'm really sorry, kids, but you spent all the money on alcohol, and you won't be getting any presents. Well, at least I got a buzz.
That's the Hanukkah robot funk. Right about now, gonna drop some Hanukkah science. This is it. I press a button, make the gentleman cry. I rock a beat to make the hamburger fry. Now funk this joint and tricked out holiday gear. The system booming, strictly pioneer. Hunger the rear, bringing a tear.
Rockets are